In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. I read a Protestant theologian many years ago who was talking about the problem of modernity. We live in the modern era if we're talking about broad historical sweeps, but he talked about the era of modernity, which is an era where people think that which is new is good and that which is old is bad. New and improved is better. And so we're always thinking that anything that's older than yesterday is not as good as anything that was created today. And this scholar said that modernity began with the storming of the Bastille and the French Revolution, and it ended with the fall of the Berlin Wall, and that now we're in the postmodern period. But we're still dealing with the same kind of thinking that we had during the period of modernity. And if you want to trace back a little bit further, modernity began, you could say, it came out of the Enlightenment, which came out of the Protestant Reformation, which came out of nominalism, which came out of the Great Schism. So basically, the West started going off the rails at the time of the Great Schism, and then it wasn't as obvious for many centuries how far they were getting. But given time, there's a straight line from the Great Schism to the French Revolution and then the Bolshevik Revolution. This is an infection of the mind that Father Saffron Rose talks about. And this is, you know, Russia, if you want to talk about its own history in the modern period, Peter the Great was the one who made Russia into a modern, powerful state, but he was not a great friend of the church, and he did many things to limit the influence of the church. But after him, many of the czars were pious by their instincts, but they also were born into a system where there was this limitation that was placed upon the church, and so there was sort of like, on the one hand, during the time of that we're going to be talking about, of Sadik Nadi Brancheninov, there was a flowering of monasticism that was taking place in Russia, but at the same time, we had many elements in Russian society that were heading in the wrong direction and fast. Saint Ignaty was born to a noble family in the year 1807. His mother had for many years tried to have a child and failed to have any that survived, and she prayed fervently. She went to the monastery where the relics of Saint Dimitri of Priluki were located, and her prayers were finally answered. So when she gave birth to the future Saint Ignatius, she chose the name of Saint Dimitri to name him after this saint that had granted her prayers. They went on to have 8 more children that survived childhood. When Dimitri reached the age of 15, his father entered him into the Imperial School of Military Engineers at St. Petersburg, and he did so well in his entrance exam that he even attracted the notice of the director of the school, who was the Grand Duke Nikolai Pavlovich, the future Tsar Nicholas I, and he invited him into the palace, introduced him to his wife. And his wife suggested that he be given a stipend, so basically a salary while he was going to school. While he was in St. Petersburg, he became acquainted with some of the most notable figures in St. Petersburg, including Alexander Pushkin. But he wasn't satisfied with the usual nominal piety of high society in St. Petersburg. It was the practice, if you were any kind of a government official, that you had to confess and commune once a year. And so people did that precisely once a year. They didn't do it more often than that. Maybe they might do it on their names day in Pascha and do it twice if they were really pious, but communion was very infrequent. And he longed for more, and he went to the priest who was the chaplain of the school, and he asked if he'd be allowed to go to confession and communion more often, and the priest told him no and even reported him to the school administration. What is this kid thinking, that he wants to go to communion more often than that? And it's hard for us to imagine, because I think the Russian church has come back as a whole to promoting the idea of frequent communion. But back then, it was very uncommon for people to commune many times in a year, and particularly in high society. So Since the chaplain of the school wouldn't hear his confession or allow him to commune, he began, along with a friend of his, to go to the St. Alexander Nevsky Lavra, where he found a more sympathetic spiritual father. But when St. Ignaty's father found out that his son was going to the Lavra and that he was considering even becoming a monastic, he contacted the director of the school and asked him to keep an eye on his son. So you think about the problems you might be having with your children. Just imagine a parent that has a child that's getting too pious and the father's telling people, keep an eye on him. And, you know, his father was pious in his own way, but he had his expectations about what kind of a life his son was going to live, and it was not done that a nobleman would become a monk. It just, you know, maybe after many years late in life he might become a monk, but a young man with a promising career, that just wasn't done. So it wouldn't have reflected good on the family, and he came from a family that was very prominent. So he finally decided to fulfill his desire when he met with the elder Leonid, who later became the Saint Leonid of Optina. He was distinguished for his wisdom, his spiritual insight, his ascetical life, and after the first conversation, he told his friend Michael, Father Leonid has captured my heart. Now it is definite. I'm going to be discharged, and I'm going to follow the elder. He was repeatedly denied a release, however. Tsar Nicholas I refused to allow him to be discharged. However, he became ill, and it became clear that he wouldn't be able to fulfill his duties, and so he finally was allowed to have a discharge. And afterwards, he traveled to St. Petersburg, the Svirsk Monastery, where the elder Leonid was then serving. And he entered into asceticism with great fervor. As a matter of fact, he hid the fact that he came from a noble family, and he was given the duties of helping the cook in the kitchen of the monastery. And it so happened that the cook had been a former serf from his father's estate. So this was a person who, I wouldn't say it'd be exactly like a slave, but I mean, that's a serf was somewhat like a slave. He was bound to the land, and he had to do what the owners of the land told him to do. And so he had this person who had been in this low estate in his own home, and now this person was telling him what to do. And yet he embraced that with all humility and began to grow spiritually. But when his parents found out that he became a novice in the monastery, they cut all ties with him and they denied him any material assistance. Over the years, they softened on the matter, but they were very resistant. St. Ignaty, who became a future instructor of monks, was distinguished by his complete obedience and deep humility, and lived his life according to true obedience. The elder Leonid was forced to leave the monastery, and his disciples, including the future St. Ignatius, along with his friend Michael, left and eventually went to the Optina Monastery. His parents' opinions softened, but they still tried to persuade him to return to his secular life. But on June the 20th, 1831, he finally was tonsured a monk, and he took on the name of St. Ignatius the God-bearer. He was ordained a deacon on July the 5th and a priest on July the 20th. And then he was made the superior of a small monastery that was in ruins, but he began to rebuild it. However, Tsar Nicholas I remembered this former student of his, and he ordered that he be sent not to Moscow, but to St. Petersburg, so that he could see him in person. And when he met him, he was presented to the Tsar, and he was very happy to see him, but after a few explanations, the Tsar said, I love you as I did before, but you still owe me your education, which I gave you because of my love for you. You did not want to serve me in the place I offered you and chose your own path, so it is on that path that you must repay your debt to me. I am giving you the Holy Trinity, St. Sergius Hermitage near St. Petersburg, and I want you to live there and make it a model monastery which will serve as an example to other monasteries. And so the Tsar put him in charge of this monastery, which again was not in great shape at this time, and yet in a very short period of time, it became an example of a great monastery. And one day, Tsar Nicholas popped by the monastery, and he said, "Is Father Archimandrite right at home? Tell him that his old friend is here to see him." And he had fulfilled the Tsar's wishes by making this monastery great, and the Tsar was able to see this in person. St. Ignatius suffered many illnesses and trials. He asked to be retired many times. He was retired briefly from his duty as being the superior of a monastery, but then he was made a bishop of the Caucasus. So he was given even more responsibility than he had before. And again, he poured himself into this great effort and was effective in evangelizing Muslims, putting the church affairs in orders. And then finally, he was allowed to retire in 1861, and he reposed in the Lord in the year 1867. But I give all that as background because what is he known best for? He's known best for his writings. He has left us a great number of spiritual books, more and more of which are being translated into English. Jordanville now has five volumes of his works in English translation available to us. Many years ago, Father Thomas Hopko, who is the dean of St. Vladimir Seminary, came to Houston and he visited with the clergy in the Houston Orthodox Clergy Association. And I remember him making some observations as he was talking to the clergy and giving his wisdom to the assembled priests. He said, "There are three books that a priest should read every day." He said, "The Bible, the Sayings of the Desert Fathers, and the Arena by St. Ignaty Brunchanino." So I've often repeated this advice in confession, he said you should read these every day, and basically when you get to the end, you start over. That was what he was saying. Now, personally, I think that now we have a lot more books in English that are available. There are other books that are on par with the Arena, so I wouldn't say only read that book every day. But the fact that it was placed alongside the Bible and the Sayings of the Desert Fathers is essential reading for priests, I think, speaks very highly of this book, and I would encourage you all to get a copy. Why is he so important to us? Well, it goes back to what I was talking about in terms of modernity. He lived in the modern period. He understood the way people think now, even though he did live before the days of the internet and many inventions, but we can relate to him in a way that it's harder for us to relate when we read, say, the Sayings of the Desert Fathers, because there we're dealing with people who are very close in their mentality to the Bible, but in many ways very far from our own mentality. But St. Ignaty had a way in his writings of sort of digesting these ancient writers and then presenting them to people like us who have difficulty understanding these things and saying, here's how you can actually do these things. So I would encourage you all to get your hands on his writings when you see them available. We have them in the bookstore, but the Arena would be the very first one that I would recommend. And of course, ask for his prayers and intercessions. We need to seek his prayers that our church be guided, because we too live in difficult times and we need wise leaders, and we need to be wise ourselves to learn how to lead souls to God. Amen.